The Christian Andreacchio case was prematurely closed by authorities, but many questions remain. Come behind the curtain and follow private investigator Sheila Wysocki as she uncovers the truth about what happened to Christian. This is Without Warning. Warning: listener discretion is advised.
My name is Penny, and I'm a listener of Without Warning podcast.
The Meridian Police Department called Dylan back at 4:53, and that call lasted 4 minutes and 22 seconds. So that takes you into 4:57, 4:58.
The police that are on scene at the Woodlands are 9 minutes away from the Willow Ridge apartment complex. But the first officer on scene is James LeGoy. And in his report, he doesn't mention his arrival time. He has the next arrival as Gordon and Allen, and that's at 5:04. And then at 5:05, Massey arrives. 5:08, Metro EMT arrive, three of them, as well as Wilburn and Carter. At 5:25, Thompson arrives. And at 5:43, Scott and Ladding arrive. EMTs are noting an arrival time of 5:06 and that they're already doing vital signs at 5:08.
First responders arrive and there's an EMS already on the scene. So they thought aid was already started. They didn't question why that person was there. They also knew that there was a relationship between Dylan and his half-brother. He was called earlier and given the address. So all of that was established as they are arriving, and the scene was chaotic. The dog, Boomer, was running around in and out of the apartment. People are running after Boomer, and the other witness says Whitley's sitting on the couch crying, and Dylan, according to our witnesses, kind of just talking to people.
As you know, I'm a big believer in crowdsourcing. A listener sent me audio between herself and Joel Hamilton. Joel Hamilton has represented himself as Whitley's spokesperson.
But it still doesn't explain Dylan, his whole role.
I don't know nothing about it. I mean, I can't. Because here's the thing is, what if, I'm not saying I think anything, that he did anything weird. But if he did, if I support him, then I can't support her. Because now I got to go after him to support her. I can't be on both sides.
No, that's understandable.
As a professional thing.
Then they go into the condo while the police are chasing Boomer. They walk up and they said that they were surprised at all the dog poop everywhere. They had stepped in it. They're going upstairs. And what they first saw didn't comprehend what they were seeing because they were told it was a suicide. However, the positioning of Christian at that time didn't necessarily line up with this is a suicide. He was draped over the tub. His arms were behind him. And no one at that point could identify where the gun was. So when they first got there, no one knew where the gun was.
Handled the gun.
What?
I think some shit got staged, but I don't think it was because they killed him. I think it's because they were scared that the cops were coming.
Yeah.
And I still think she was asleep when he did it. Because the things, when I told her things I found, she's like, holy shit, so I'm going through all this because Dylan might have done something. I said, I don't know, maybe.
My name is Alina Burrows, and I'm currently a forensic application engineer with Faro Technologies. I am a retired crime scene investigator in Orange County, Florida.
What are the duties and responsibilities of a first responder?
Rendering aid would be first, and then locating and securing either the weapon or leaving the weapon where it is and then securing the scene. Like, typically, we don't want any responders to remove the weapon from the scene. We would rather remove people from the scene, because the position and location of the gun is important. So that needs to stay where it is, and then the people need to be removed from the scene.
So when you first go to a scene, you assess where Christian was.
Well, in my jurisdiction, nothing would be touched, including Christian, because the victim is not the jurisdiction of the local law enforcement. It's the jurisdiction of the medical examiner or the coroner.
My name is Mark Gillespie. I own Gillespie Forensic and Investigations. I'm a private investigator. My background is forensic science and criminal investigations.
Mark, is that the same in Austin?
Well, that's pretty much the same in everywhere I've been. It's hands off until you get approval by medical examiner or the coroner. That's SOP, standard operating procedure.
Can you take me through that initial response of what you see and how you go about it?
Sure. So there's multiple levels of first responders. Do you know that if the Meridian Police Department has a crime scene unit, any type of forensic unit, or is it all sworn police officers that are doing double duty as crime scene?
I think it's only police officers.
Yeah, I believe that's part of the problem. So initially, what would happen is the first responding officer would get there and should assess the victim as to whether or not they are in need of medical attention so that they can dispatch EMT or expedite the process if necessary. If the victim is obviously deceased, the first responder should escort one single EMT, so as few as possible to contaminate the scene, into that area to check for vital signs. The EMT at that point should probably run a strip that basically says that there is no heart rate or no pulse, no breathing, no signs of life that would indicate why they didn't proceed with life-saving measures. And at that point, the scene should basically be secured and have people removed from the scene and held until either a detective or your main investigator arrives on the scene. So the patrol officers that arrive should then be tasked with separating any of the witnesses that were on the scene and taking statements from them at that time. And one of the things that tweaked me when I was reading some of the reports was one of the first responders on scene said, "I met with the first officer on scene to find out what we had." And then the next line of that report was, you know, I was told we had, or it looked like a suicide. I was told we had a suicide. So it was something early on in the investigation that made it seem to me like nobody was going into that scene with an open mind of what do we have. It was somebody used the word suicide early on, and then everybody else accepted that as fact and conducted their investigation as if that was fact. And they didn't look for anything contrary to that. To that point, with not being able to find the firearm, the first sign of an obvious suicide, right, is a gun in somebody's hand. That might be something that we would expect to find. So how did they not immediately come into this scene, not be able to locate a firearm? The skill of crime scene investigation is not the ability to take every single thing in the house and put it in a bag. Skill is determining the things that don't belong, the things that stand out as potentially having value. So certainly the things in the immediate area, if there's a beer bottle, especially one of a label that seems to be of itself, in and of itself, it's not belonging to a 12 pack that's downstairs or something like that, that certainly should be collected and processed.
I don't think he drank Dos Equis. I don't know whose Dos Equis it was.
Evidence that can show, I think the house was clearly in a kind of disrupted state. It looks like a kind of a party house to me. It looks like a lot of frat parties I think I've been at, you know, where there's cigarettes and different bottles and stuff around there that shows that there's been a lot of people coming and going, or that could have given evidence, not necessarily to who committed a homicide, but who was present and potentially some other witnesses or something like that. So yes, more should have been collected, more should have been processed. But the problem here is, when you come into the scene with blinders on, somebody tells you it's a suicide, you take that for a fact, your brain does something where it looks for only things to support that idea. So I think people went into this case as this is a suicide, and they kind of ignored anything to the contrary of that. And that's why things weren't processed properly. That's why they weren't collected. That's why they weren't handled better. They were looking for things to prove that it was a suicide. Why? Because it's easy. Homicides are hard investigations to work. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of interviews. It's a lot of manpower. It's a whole lot easier to call something a suicide. It's a laziness.
Well, upon arrival at the scene, I certainly would pay close attention to everything on the outside, you know, vehicles in the parking lot, you know, the condition of the home. You walk inside. And I think knowing how what the pictures present, that it was an animal house, a party house, I would begin to wonder, okay, what what's really been going on here? And then it looks like more than just two or three people, you know, partying. So here you have a dead body. I would want to know who was here the past 24 hours, what was going on. I would, you know, that interviews, I would build a timeline. So I think the condition of the home tells me a lot, gives me a lot of information that really needs to be pursued. What they recall, part of the important part of the investigation.
Handled the gun.
What?
I think some shit got staged, but I don't think it was because they killed him. I think it's because they were scared that the cops were coming.
Yeah.
And I still think she was asleep when he did it. Because the things, when I told her things I found, she'd be like, holy shit, so I'm going to do all this because Dylan might have done something. I said, I don't know, maybe.
EMT roll to a scene, not knowing necessarily what's going on or how many people are needed. And there might only be one EMT. Usually there's one that's noted, and that's the EMT that physically does the exam or runs a strip on the victim to ensure that there are vital signs or no vital signs.
When people went into the bathroom, you know, he was slumped over the tub in a very unusual position, I'd have to say, both arms to the side. I think when the rigor had already started to set in, which is important to know because that certainly gives us kind of a time of death estimation or a range to work within. Of course, based on the picture that we saw, we're not really able to determine lividity because of the clothing and parts of his body just aren't easily seen at that particular moment. But his body certainly did look like, I mean, his legs seemed rigid from the thighs to the knees, almost as though he had been, you know, in a seating position previously. You know, if you look at his elbows and, you know, his arms, they certainly appear to have some early stages of a rigor mortis setting in.
Would that have said to you that he's been there for more than an hour?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're investigating a case like this, you're going to let the facts, the science, and the investigation determine what you're dealing with. You never automatically rule a death a suicide without looking at the facts and the evidence surrounding that death. And in this particular case, everything points to a homicide, not a suicide. So the facts should support the manner of death ruling, and I don't think that any of the facts from this case support suicide as the manner of death.
When they started to move him, now this is so important, when they started to move him is when the gun was found. It was on the left side of him, and as soon as they started to lift him and they saw the gun, they stopped immediately and brought in the police. What was observed were several things. The gun was decocked. Not one person had touched it. That's an eyewitness saying the gun was decocked. It was on the left side of his thigh. Now, what does that say to you all?
To me, immediately seeing that the gun was hidden, the victim's face, Christian's face was face down, that was hidden. Those are things that indicate somebody that is known, a suspect that is known to the victim. They don't want to see those things. The positioning of the body was immediately consistent with being moved, especially anytime you see one leg crossed over the other. That's consistent with being placed on the floor. Potentially think of yourself laying on your back on the floor and then someone coming to your shoulders and then rolling you over. What would happen to your feet? One would fall over the other, crossed, typically at the ankle area. So to me, immediately looking at that photograph, it looks like he's clearly been rolled at some point. I know I read a statement that said somebody had gone through his pockets. If somebody had gone through his pockets, they certainly didn't do it in the final resting position. The way that he was bent, that would have been nearly impossible. It's very difficult to go through someone's pockets unless they're laid out flat on their back. And even then you have evidence where the pocket is disturbed or the interior contents of the pocket are pulled out, especially if any contents like cigarettes or a lighter were removed from that pocket. To me, looking at the initial picture, there was no struggle, which again indicates that the assailant is known to the victim. You were talking that there were beer bottles that were present in the bathroom. There were shampoo bottles in the back of the tub that were all upright. The shower curtain was neatly pulled back to one side. So everything to me looks consistent with an assailant that was known to the victim and the body being moved afterwards, especially like Mark stated with rigor mortis. Rigor mortis onsets around 2 hours and it peaks 10 to 12 hours. I also read in a report that the body was cool to the touch. So the body cooling is also referred to as algor mortis. Typically, the body loses 1.5 degrees of body temperature per hour. And that would depend also on the conditions inside the apartment, what they had the thermostat set at, what the weather was like that day, but that's an average. So if we're talking about a body that is cool, that has clearly some rigor mortis that has set in, we are most assuredly not talking about 30 minutes post-death. We're not even talking about 2 hours post-death.
Well, and one of the things that I think is very important, Alina, you and I have talked about this before on how the pharaoh picked up some discrepancies. What's your thought about that?
When you have gunshots, you have two types of blood spatter that are typically created. You have fore spatter and back spatter. So back spatter would be traveling the opposite direction of the bullet. That would end up on the shooter's hands or on the firearm. And then you have fore spatter that would travel the same direction as the bullet was traveling. So if we have a path entering right temple area, exiting left temple area, if Christian were in the bathroom facing the mirror, we would expect to have some force spatter traveling in the same direction of the bullet, which would be potentially on the back wall with the towel bar slash tub shower area, as well potentially as ceiling.
Okay, so when you shoot yourself, he shot himself so perfectly through his brainstem that the neurosurgeon told me he was dead. He never heard the gunshot. He was dead before his ears could even process the sound.
Okay.
Your body immediately stiffens up, everything tightens up, and you just get completely straight, and then you completely relax. And my neurosurgeon buddy thinks holes in the tub, holes in the wall, be damned. He was standing up in the middle of that bathroom.
Okay.
And I think that because they found the hole in the wall and they found the marks in the tub, they tried to make the narrative fit that he... I think they tried to make the narrative fit the holes rather than fit what the body was doing.
What's your take on her being asleep and not hearing the gunshots? Because, I mean, I know that being on pills...
That's the toughest part. But, you know, the bathroom's upstairs from where she was sleeping. So it's on another floor.
Right.
And she taking 8 milligrams of Xanax.
Okay.
Here's the part I think that most of you, I've got a very graphic video of a guy shooting himself in a police station with a .45. There's no splatter. And the gunshot is barely above conversation level because when you hold it to your head as tightly as he did, your head muffles it. And that's why his skull shattered too. Because, I mean, he had it pressed so hard to his head that the ejector rod underneath the barrel made a dent in his head.
Okay.
High velocity blood spatter looks like spray. If you think of like aerosolized blood, like almost like if you sprayed hairspray on something, but it were blood, it's very fine and mist-like.
What about the drip? What would that say?
Drips would indicate like a downward. Again, I'd have to look at the actual stain, but anytime you have a stain that's 90 degrees, that's a complete circle. So that would be 90 degrees, a drop, somebody standing up and dripping blood downward onto the floor. And then as the angle gets more elongated, the angle of impact is less. So we would go from 90 degrees being a circle to like a 10 degree blood stain being very thin and elongated.
Okay, so are you holding your phone with your left hand?
With my right hand.
Okay, are you right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed.
All right, switch hands.
Okay.
Now, make a little toy gun with your fingers like you would when you're a little kid.
Okay.
Put it up to your forehead.
Okay.
Is it straight up and down or is it an angle?
It's at an angle.
That's the angle that the gun was out of before.
Ray came in and used Blue Star Luminol.
Okay, Blue Star is the new Luminol. Luminol was what was used early on to recognize blood stains that are not visualized by the naked eye. The problem with Luminol was that it interfered with DNA analysis. So Blue Star came about, and Blue Star doesn't interfere as much with DNA analysis. You can also apply Blue Star multiple times, whereas Luminol, it's kind of a one-shot deal. Luminol, you have to set up the camera and the alternate light source as if you're expecting to observe some sort of chemiluminescence. Whether or not you get it or not, you don't know. With Blue Star, you can apply the chemical one time, see a reaction, then set up your camera and apply it a second time and capture it on film. So Blue Star is kind of like new and improved Luminol. It's what I would expect to see used in this time so that it would not interfere with DNA analysis. So Luminol back in the day was great. You would find the blood, but it would also interfere with the ability to do DNA analysis. So you would find blood, but then you wouldn't be able to determine whose it was, or potentially would not be able to determine that. So Blue Star allows you to locate that item of blood and then swab it and then still be able to perform DNA analysis to determine the type. So it also gives a brighter chemiluminescent reaction. So that's easier to capture on film.
They stop the crime scene. They stop removing Christian's body. They secure the gun. But before they secured the gun, witnesses said it was decocked. It was on the left side. They bag and tag the gun. Then they start removing Christian again. They put him on the shroud. What they noted, or what they have told me, is there was no way he was dead for an hour. They felt like it was at least 4 hours, which is consistent with a witness who came forward when she heard the shot.
Sometime within the time frame of 11 to 2, which is when he always naps then, and when I was sitting down in my living room, I heard a gunshot.
I mean, the homicide detectives should have come in, taken over. They should have taped off the area. They should have removed everyone from the outside, well away from the apartment. And then they should have handled it as a homicide. They did not know what they were dealing with. They botched it from the get-go. It said that the coroner had actually stood up on the tub to try to lift him, and that's when Christian fell and hit his nose on the tub. And I think the coroner denied that that happened.
That has been a rumor in Meridian. That never happened. I spoke to the EMSs and they never dropped his body. And they're not sure why that rumor was started.
Comment about the injury to Christian's nose. If a complete autopsy was performed, that would show whether or not that injury was either pre-mortem, post-mortem, or perimortem. So they would be able to determine if that injury had happened in the movement of Christian, because you wouldn't have bleeding under the skin if it was post-mortem. The heart is not continually circulating blood at that point. So you might have a cut, but the cut should not bleed unless his head was lower than his heart at that point. But anyway, an autopsy should have shown whether that injury, or could have shown whether that injury, occurred before or after death.
One thing that's being put out there, the EMS workers shook the sheets, and that's why there was blood pattern.
Wasn't that a theory presented by the MBI when they couldn't explain? It wasn't even, from what I read, and not any initial reports, but just conveniently put in there by the MBI.
I have on the record that that did not happen. They do not do things like that. And that was the most absurd, ridiculous theory out there. That needs to be put to bed. And if anybody wants to challenge it, we can prove that even if someone shook the sheets, the pattern wouldn't be the same. Am I correct?
First of all, what sheets does EMT even have? Are we talking about cotton sheets? And if they're cotton, they're not, nothing is going to shake off of them because it would have been absorbed. If they're plastic sheets, why would EMT shake bloody plastic sheets? Because they're going to get blood on themselves.
Thank you.
I agree, Elena.
Let me throw something else in there, though. They are trained to not clean up after themselves, because in the cleanup process, they could remove items of evidence from the scene unintentionally. So EMTs are trained to leave whatever trash, whatever pieces of pads that are put on to do chest to run a strip, whatever items, gloves, or anything that are left behind, they are trained to leave them behind so that in the cleanup process, they don't accidentally pick up a casing or something in those.
Are there non-murder reasons he might have cleaned up around that house?
Not that I can see, no.
What about the fact they were all using drugs, steroids, Xanax, cocaine?
No, that makes sense, I guess, but that doesn't explain the lack of blood.
Okay. Well, though, there's a ton of blood in the tub. And my neurosurgeon that looked at it said there's the appropriate amount of blood in the tub.
Okay.
There's a ton of blood in the tub, like filled with blood. And the bullet, when they picked it up, there was not blood underneath it. So that means the bullet beat the blood into the toilet, into the tub, I mean. But here's the other thing I'm thinking. And I don't know that this is true. This is just pure speculation. Dylan said he handled the gun that day, right?
Right.
I wonder if when he walked up there and found him, he didn't think, oh, fuck, I held that gun today. My prints are on that gun, and now my friend shot himself, and they're going to take prints off the gun, and they're going to think I killed him. And he wiped the fucking gun down. That's not that he killed him, but he had an oh shit moment where he thought, oh fuck, I've had that gun in my hand.
So the reason that the MBI is giving, or EMTs are shaking the sheet, is that they can't find the bullet. But the bullet has been photographed in the bathtub. So that's just ridiculous.
What you just said about the cleanup, that they're not supposed to clean up after themselves. Everybody has put a lot on these EMS workers saying they did all these things. they didn't have enough time to do all these. And one of the theories is they took a shirt, a white shirt that Christian had on, and used that to wipe up the blood. So there was blood on a white shirt that was stuffed behind the toilet. Now, how many emergency personnel would clean up and stuff a shirt behind a toilet in any scenario ever?
Zero.
Zero, absolutely. I gave a visual aid.
Zero.
Have you ever heard anything like that?
No, never.
It seems to me that the narrative is to attack the people that were there. Are they just an easy target?
Yeah, they're an easy target. And if they were there first, then it's impossible to take any personal blame for the scene being mishandled, because you will just say, well, the scene was mishandled before I even got here. So it's an easy scapegoat.
What's your
sense?
Yeah, no, it does. What's your take on the bloody T-shirt that was collected?
Well, there's something right by him in the crime scene pictures. I don't know if it's a hoodie or if it's a T-shirt. You want me to tell you what I really think?
Yeah,
I think some lazy EMT or cop got blood on him when they moved the body and grabbed whatever was laying around and wiped it off and just threw it down behind the toilet.
It was stuffed behind the toilet, though.
That's a little weird.
Yeah,
that is a little weird. I don't know. It's a weird thing, unless somebody felt like they needed to wipe the gun and got some blood off it. It still doesn't necessarily mean that somebody killed him.
No, it's just...
they might have been trying to... I mean, maybe he had something in his pockets that somebody didn't want anybody to see.
EMS workers are not to clean up. They're not to wipe up with shirts and stuff them behind a toilet. They're not supposed to shake sheets on plastic or cotton with blood all over them. They're not supposed to drop bodies. I mean, if they did all of this, they wouldn't be employed.
Correct. And accidents happen in transporting people, and that should have been noted on a report. If there were some, you know, if the victim were dropped, they would owe an explanation to the doctor performing that autopsy as to that injury occurred post-mortem due to a drop in the transport process, right? Things happen. However, they would have to report that information to the doctor.
Dylan had said, he said, they told the 911 operator when she asked, what's your emergency? He says, we've had a suicide. How did he know that there was a suicide? When people responded, when the EMS responded, they saw that he was slumped over. They didn't know what they were dealing with. There was no weapon that was visible. There was just blood and a body slumped over in a very awkward position, which struck the attention of EMS and those responders, and they found that very unusual. So for Dylan to say, use the word suicide, and yet no one even trained EMS day in and day out, they weren't calling it a suicide. They didn't know what it was.
Well, and they didn't even have the gun. So he said he shot himself and the gun was hidden. How did he know someone didn't come in and shoot him?
You don't think when you're a cop that this kind of shoddy stuff is going to come back to bite you. But in this case, they came back to bite him pretty damn hard.
You decide what you think really happened in that apartment after listening.
They left us with too many questions.
Yep, that's...
because they botched the investigation.
Yeah, they absolutely did.
Without Warning, executive director, executive producer, and host, Sheila Wysocki. Mix and mastering by Resonant Recording. And announcer, Tim Evans. If you or someone you know is dealing with suicidal ideation or is actively thinking about taking their life, please call the National Suicide Hotline at 1-800-273-8255.
I will continue the conversation with bonus episodes on my Patreon page, Without Warning. Please go to withoutwarningpodcast.com and buy a T-shirt and show your support to Christian Andriacchio.